This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is the Daily Digest on The Bigger Picture. I'm Sharmila Ganesan, together with Juliet Jacobs and Lim Soo Ann. As always, we have two stories for you today. First up, did you know that space researchers have been working with artists on their mission to decode the universe's mysteries? We discuss how art could actually help advance science. Now, as much as we've been having conversations about decreasing this divide between the arts and the sciences, we generally do still tend to think of the two fields as being quite separate. No thanks to, you know, long entrenched education system. And if we're really being honest here, you know, there is also still a tendency to view the arts as somehow being less important or having less relevance to things that quote unquote really matter, I suppose. But you know who doesn't think so? Astronomer and extraterrestrial intelligence researcher Jill Tarter. So Jill Tarter is the chair emeritus of Scientific Research Institute SETI. And this is what made me geek out. She's also the inspiration for Jodie Foster's character in the movie Contact.
Oh.
Yeah. So she essentially researches extraterrestrial intelligence. And she's a big believer in scientists looking towards art to help with her, to help uncover sort of their biggest problems and answer some of their questions. And she spoke about this recently in an interview with The Guardian.
So SETI stands for Search for Extraterrestrial... Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence.
It's quite a mouthful.
Aliens, basically.
Yes, aliens. Yeah. And the Institute brings together astronomers, solar system dynamics experts, exoplanet detection specialists, astrochemists, and other bright minds to decode the universe's mysteries. But since 2010, SETI has also been working with people with a rather different expertise. So these are artists. And in 2010, SETI began an artist-in-residence program. And the idea of this was to both broaden the way scientists looked at their work, as well as make challenging scientific concepts more accessible to the public.
Yeah, so according to Jill Tarter, the Artist in Residence program began when she met artist Charles Lindsay and saw a work of art that he had created. So Lindsay's work usually brings together technology and biomimicry. And here's what Tarter said about seeing his work. Quote unquote, we have a hard time in SETI and in the search for life beyond Earth, trying to imagine what we can't imagine. So we don't really know what life somewhere else would look like, would be like, sorry. And we don't know what technology somewhere else would be like. But here I was looking at a piece of art that made me think of life and biology, and it dawned on me that maybe an artist is somebody who could help us envision things we hadn't thought of before.
And so that is how Charles Lindsay himself became the first artist in residence at SETI back in 2010. And during his time there, he worked with an astronomer and the Alaska Whale Foundation.
Aww.
Who would have thought, right?
Yes.
To create an installation called Code Humpback. And this art installation explores ideas of encrypted signals, interspecies communication by using whale vocalizations combined with Morse code and also with ocean surface interference patterns. Who would have thought when you think of art that you could use such science-y things? And this actually helped scientists working on these individual areas, which often can seem like very obscure branches of science. It helps them present their work to the public in a way that wasn't a scientific journal, basically. And if you look it up, you can actually look up Charles Lindsay and Code Humpback. And it's kind of like this very mesmerizing video of whale sounds and Morse code sort of put together with images of oceans and just very odd and interesting, and really gives you an idea of sort of an otherworldly sense, but also utilizing things that exist in our world. So it's very cool, but definitely using very solid scientific ideas.
So a nice marriage between the two different varieties.
Yeah.
You know. And, you know, another project is the Earthling Project, and that involves film composer Felipe Perez Santiago, who is working with Tarter herself. Santiago is crowdsourcing sounds, actually, from around the world, which he will use to write a soundtrack and which he hopes to eventually launch into space. And Santiago's aim is to create collaborative music that celebrates Earth's cultural diversity.
While also,
you know, sort of emphasizing humans as a single species. And Tata is hoping that the Earthling Symphony, as they're calling it, will go with Elon Musk's first crew to Mars.
That's very cool, isn't it?
Yeah. An Earthling Symphony, yeah. That's quite exciting. So SETI's current artist in residence is Zainab Al-Hashemi, and she's teaming up with astronomer Mark Showalter, who helped run NASA's missions to Saturn and Pluto. So the result of both their collaboration together is a kinetic sculpture that uses geometry and motion, and this will be shown at Expo 2020 in the United Arab Emirates. So Showalter said that working with Al-Hashemi pushed him beyond his usual modes of thinking, and this allowed him to use a very creative approach to the work that he normally does.
And, you know, the other artists in residence at SETI are doing stuff that just sounds so fascinating. There's artist and engineer Zin Liu, who wants to explore time suspended in water. Jordan Holmes, who's an engineer, spoken word artist and musician, who's interested in interactive storytelling environments. And electronic artist Daedalus, who plans to create a map by using spatial audio. So the thing is, this divide between the arts and the science, right? It's actually relatively new, yeah. Because back in the Renaissance era, thinkers, artists and inventors were practically interchangeable. And I suppose the most preeminent example of that would be Leonardo da Vinci,
exactly.
Whose work was in art, it was also in science, and they both often interwove with each other. They complemented each other. And it was really his understanding of science and perspective that allowed him to create the paintings that he could, while at the same time his ability to paint and visualize allowed him to create these stunning scientific drawings. Mm-hmm. So it was actually in the Victorian era that the arts and the sciences began to diverge and sort of become the two separate fields that we know them as today.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Definitely. And, you know, Da Vinci aside, there are many other examples throughout history of people whose works intertwine arts and science. So there's Spanish Nobel Prize winner Santiago Ramón y Cajal, who in the 1890s, created beautifully detailed drawings of the brain. Mm-hmm. He actually originally wanted to be an artist. And then there's also artist John James Audubon's paintings of birds in the 1800s. And they're both lovely to look at. And they were also a very, very valuable source in documenting these US birds. There's the other artist, Maria Sibylla American, who in the 1600s investigated over 150 animal and plant species. And her detailed engravings and descriptions actually set the course for modern ecological illustration. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting, I've seen them in books for children these days. I use them for my kids. And there's botanist Anna Atkins, who's also often thought to be the first female photographer for her groundbreaking photographs of sea algae in the 1840s. And this, of course, very famous, I think a lot of people know, artist M.C. Escher, who used complicated mathematics to draft out his drawings, which combine both realism and fantasy.
Mm. And I think one of the things that cuts through all of these examples is that we can immediately see the value that the arts can bring towards these very complex scientific concepts, right? Mm-hmm. They really bridge ideas that can seem very removed and make them seem much more human, much more relatable.
Yeah.
You know, it's easy to talk about ecology, right? But when you look at a painting or when you look at a beautifully realized watercolor of a bird, there's an immediate connection that's made. That's not the same as reading about it or looking at a chart, right?
Yeah.
And people respond instinctively to art and beauty, and often with a much more emotional connection as well. On the other side of it, of course, the world of arts can often let scientists imagine possibilities. There are fewer boundaries. It's less structured. And so it lets scientists kind of step out of that rigid environment that they may be used to and explore and play in a way that can then feed back into the work that they do. As Jill Tata of SETI says, art gives people an opportunity to think about bigger picture ideas or to think about them in a new way.
Yeah, and SETI isn't the only scientific organization to have seen this value of bringing in the arts right into science. And so both the European Organization for Nuclear Research, which is known as CERN, and the European Space Agencies, both these organizations have artist residencies as well. And NASA also has a long history of working with artists. They've established the NASA Art Program back in 1962. So artists including Norman Rockwell, Andy Warhol were commissioned to record the history of space exploration through the eyes of artists. Mm. And the NASA Art Program collection currently includes 2,500 works by more than 350 artists.
So I was really curious to hear from a working artist about this so-called art and science divide. So I spoke earlier today to artist Blank Malaysia, and I asked him, what can artists bring to the study of science?
The way I see it, I feel art and science is mostly two sides to the same coin. Basically, art and science pursue the same thing. Artists and scientists basically look through the world, get inspired by it, and then try to understand it through their practice, and then in the end, make it into something which is easily expressed to someone else. It's something which has been done, I think, for a long, long time. It's not something recent. If you just look back at history for a little bit, you can see like artists like Da Vinci, Rembrandt and Vermeer, to properly express the human body, they had to go into the scientific facts. They did their own research and then they came out with an art piece. So if you want to look at it in a 21st century contemporary art kind of way, it still continues. You can see there is a lot of collaborations between artists and scientists. For example, during the space missions for NASA, NASA actually got a bunch of artists to commemorate the event through paintings. Artists like Andy Warhol was involved in it as well. So I find it quite interesting to see how art could not only document an event, but also become a historical and even scientific record.
So what does art bring to the picture that, science doesn't?
I guess once more, art and science is more or less two sides of the same coin. But how they approach things are quite different. And the objectives, I guess, sometimes could differ a little bit. Science is more towards hard facts. Art caters towards more towards like emotions and also bigger ideas. So there's more room for artists to play around the facts given and put it in more abstract and figurative way. For example, have you heard of the artist Olafur Eliasson?
Yes.
Mm. So he did a piece in the Tate Turbine Hall, which I really like, which plays around with light. He's an artist who loves talking about big concepts, but he uses simple things like light to put it out there. Yeah, another one which I quite like, which is also in the Tate Turbine Hall by an artist called Philippe Perrineau, I guess. Yeah, he created this artwork called Anywhen, which is very, very interesting because he actually activated the whole huge turbine hall in the Tate Gallery by turning into an automaton. So imagine a large space with a bunch of lights, which will be constantly switched on and switched off. You have shapes coming up and down. You have like small balloons flying around, triggered by the smallest of things, which is microorganisms like yeast. So I find it deeply moving to imagine like how small things, according to using scientific methods, you could turn into a huge artwork, which activates a huge space.
Mm. And what are some of the ways that you yourself have been inspired by or engaged with science or scientific ideas when it comes to your own work?
Currently, I'm actually doing a solo exhibition at the Titik Merah Gallery. So it's called The Intolerable Interval. Me as an artist, I really love science and philosophy and history. And I try to combine all of it into my practice. I guess if I look at my exhibition, one series which relates to this would be the Anthropocene Machine and also the Carbon Hybrids. So these two series actually talk about the theme which is central to my exhibition, which is entropy. So the Anthropocene Machine basically sees this artwork as a satellite, as a time capsule for a message which is from the present to be taken to the future.
That was artist Blank Malaysia, whose exhibition is currently going on at the Titik Merah Gallery, if you'd like to check out his works for yourself. Mm. So I'm curious about, do you guys ever think of the science behind the artworks that you see? What are some of the, I suppose the art that you've experienced that really did shine a light on something more science related?
I remember when I visited the Natural History Museum in London a while ago, and they had this section that was watercolor paintings, and it's similar to some of the examples we mentioned earlier. I can't remember in this case who did them, but it was just paintings of researchers from hundreds of years ago when they didn't have the ability to photograph these animals. They couldn't bring these animals back. So what they, and even if they could, it was preserved in alcohol, right? So the animals would lose their color. You can't see the details. So they would paint these animals in such vivid watercolors. It's so detailed and you can see everything, right? And they're doing this for scientific purposes so that they can study this later on without having to rely on the actual specimen itself. And it's very cool.
For me, actually, just yesterday, you know, Sharmila and I were both at Ashley Urbanscapes.
That's right.
And, you know, there were plenty of light installations, right? The groups themselves, they named it three, there were three different rooms, right? Sharmila, you know, there was a lucid room, lunar room, and lumen room.
That's right.
And basically, it was just a play of lights, but it needed you to interact with the lights to get a reaction as such, right? And I know in one, for example, we had to stand and then lights would appear on the floor. Where we stood and started moving around.
And then
around.
As we moved around, it would follow us around.
It would follow us around. But then the point that the artists are trying to make was for us to stand in different positions and actually lines would then start to join our individual circles to show how we're all interconnected. So if you ask me to explain the science behind it, I don't. But, you know, to me and to my four-year-old daughter, it was fascinating, right? We really, really loved it. And, I mean, there were so many other different things that Rex KL is also having.
They're doing the Ainyala exhibition
as well. So, again, that was a play on lights and visual arts and installation. And I don't get the science behind it, but I do want to go and read up about it.
Yeah. No, I think that's actually part of the thing, right? Maybe we don't necessarily need to understand, I mean, about the humpback, code humpback earlier. It's not like having watched that video, I now understand how whale communication works. But it does inspire in me a sort of fascination and a curiosity. And I think that's what the arts can do for science.
You want to get the people who see this piece of art to be like, oh, I want to find out more about how the artist came up with this idea, what technology perhaps they're using, what are the principles behind it. And from that, perhaps you can get people to be more interested in the science behind it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it doesn't have to be visual arts necessarily, right? There's, of course, I remember we've spoken on the show about climate fiction, cli-fi, right? Yeah. So that, again, talks about this, you know, difficult scientific concepts and puts it in a creative way so that people can relate to it better. Mm-hmm. And I mean, even if you think about songs, even Hijau, Zainal Abidin's Hijau, I mean, that's more tugging at your heartstrings, but then it gets you to think about environmental degradation, and that also leads back to science. So there's just so many different examples of artists just trying to, I guess artists and scientists, they're just trying to make sense of the world and then share that understanding.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of my favorite works of art that kind of combines science and art was the Strand Beasts, which were by Theo Jansson. Mm-hmm. And the videos went viral like a few years ago, you know, when he mounted these huge, they're made out of PVC and they're basically, they look like these otherworldly creatures and they look like they're powered by motors, but they're not. They move on their own. They move by kinetic energy. Mm-hmm. Some of them have hydraulics built into them, but they're all self-sufficient and they can move on their own. And I finally got to see them in real life at the Art Science Museum in Singapore last year. And I was just fascinated. And I still remain fascinated because that's the thing about science. Knowing how it works doesn't take away from the experience or the enjoyment of it. And that's where I think the art comes in, because this is also art, right? It's very heavily reliant on scientific concepts, but it allows you to keep experiencing that wonder. Sort of like when you're a kid and you go to a science museum for the first time and you touch one of those things and your hair stands up, right?
Yes, of course.
I feel like each time someone comes up with these ideas, you relive that sort of fascination with the real world that maybe as an adult, sometimes you lose.
Yeah, and I think in SB, sort of hear more and more about how arts and science should be separate, we kind of lose that enjoyment of art and science and realize that these two are actually very much intertwined, and then you can enjoy both and not like one without the other.
And on that note, I know we also discourage people who may well have an interest in both. I mean, a scientist who might want to paint or take photographs, or vice versa, someone who has skills in arts but might also want to create work that straddles the other side. If we divide them from such a young age, often they never explore that other aspect.
Yeah, but I'm seeing, you know, a lot more scientists actually using the arts to get scientific communication. That's one of the most difficult things at the moment, right? Everything is there already. It's just how do you get people to understand it in ways that are easy for them to digest, mm-hmm. right? So they are taking things like photographs, you know, drawings, or even, like I said, music, you know, anything, yeah. even spoken word, dance, whatever. Mm-hmm. There's a group in Oxford, actually, Dr. Cedric Tan, they actually did a dance about the sexual lives of chickens and they created a whole video about it just to explain it. It's fascinating stuff. There's different ways everywhere.
Well, do you like your science being explained to you through artistic concepts? You can let us know. Tell us about some of the works that you might have enjoyed. You can tweet us at BFM Radio. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or call us at 03-7733-2900. That's it for this story. We will be back after a short break, but we leave you first with Across the Universe by The Beatles on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.